If it's local and it matters, you know where to go. The Steve Stewart Show on Real Talk 93.3.
I was born in a small town.
Happy New Year and welcome to the Steve Stewart Show here on Real Talk 93.3. Thanks for tuning in. You know, I assume most people at work this week, although I will tell you on the ride in, for me, it's amazing how little the traffic is impacted when schools are not in. And, you know, school doesn't start till Monday, which caught me a little bit off guard. But anyway, we carry on here in the studio. And again, thanks for tuning in. Got a good show for you today. A lot of things to look forward to. Want to get you up to date on, you know, it's going to be a slow beginning to the year in terms of the government meetings. We'll give you a sort of an update on what's going on there. Although the school board will meet early next week and we'll go over the agenda items that may be of some interest here. We'll go over those. But we'll also, in the next segment, want to talk about a couple of education issues. Obviously, elections are coming up, national, state elections are coming up next year. On the local election scene, one of the things that we like to do is try to look at specific policies, find out where people stand on them, and see if, you know, through our discussion, they can get traffic or traction in the campaigns that are coming up. And education is one of the areas, obviously, that we've been looking at over the last 3 or 4 years. Just recently looked at this absenteeism issue, suspensions, and, you know, there's state law now looking at the absenteeism issue. Post-COVID has had a impact on some of the trends that were happening before COVID, as we talked about here in Tallahassee with regards to suspensions and absenteeism. But, you know, a couple of things, I just like to go and look at trends around the country. And, you know, these problems are not unique to Tallahassee. It just really depends on the magnitude of the problem. But I'd like to find out what other entities are doing to try to address them. Now, I was surprised here in Florida, and I think you will be surprised by some of the laws that are in place that provide school boards some new tools to address some of these issues if they want to. And so, for example, there's a new law in terms of limiting cell phone use on campuses. This is K-12 campuses. And in Orlando, Orange County School District went a step further and completely eliminated the use of cell phones on school campuses. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have it. You can have it in your book bag, but you cannot have it out. So in other words, if there's an emergency or if you have to get in touch with your parents, you can still do that. But we're going to go over that. And I'm going to ask the question of, you know, after we go through this, and there's a New York Times wrote an article about this a month ago, and that's what we'll go over. A lot of good indications that this would be a way to go. And we'll go over that. Now, listen, there are some concerns, and I think they are now doing some feedback from parents and students during December. They don't have that out yet, but I'll be excited to see that. But this whole idea, I think, is something that might start catching fire around these different school districts. But this is something that, if you think about the impact of cell phones, and there are a lot of different things that happen. It's just not about distractions. But believe it or not, I mean, there's some stories about people actually staging fights so that they can, you know, create content for their websites. So anyway, we'll talk about that. The other issue is cameras in classrooms, a little bit less information on that. But, you know, we know here school suspensions are up. We want to talk about the discipline issue in classrooms and how it has just sort of ratcheted itself up. You don't enforce certain rules and then they take another step. You don't enforce that rule and it takes another step. We'll spend the next segment going over this and maybe part of the third segment also. And then I'll get you caught up on what local government meetings we're going to be looking at in January, sort of how they're getting started. I know that we've talked a lot about Blueprint, They won't have a meeting till February. And that's obviously when they'll start dealing with some of these other issues. Affordable housing will now be an issue that will be probably front and center on the agenda there. And in the last segment, we'll go back and reset for the beginning of the year, the elections that are coming up in August and November. We'll look at the revenues raised by the campaigns. And also I give my, again, my, you know, I talk a lot about how the progressive movement here needs to be held in check. I'm not embarrassed to talk about that. I'm not, you know, the Democratic Party has been split into two different factions. They don't like to talk about that too much. But the progressive movement here, you know, they are trying to get wrestle control of the city commission in this election cycle. And look, that's what the voters want, fine, but I want to be sure they understand the policies that are at stake here and sort of their approaches to things. But there is a, when I say things, approach to taxes, to representation, to, you know, certain parts of town. I mean, I think it's clear that they are trying to figure out how to deal with the northeast part of town in these upcoming elections. You know, a few years ago, they rode the bandwagon, the ethics bandwagon, the corruption bandwagon, and they've sort of, I think they've sort of played that out at this point, although they keep talking about it. But Northeast Tallahassee, given the increase in crime rates, their appointment, and when I say their, progressive appointment of police abolitionists to the Citizens Independent Police Review Board, things of that nature, their views on growth, I think that they're going to try to make those issues in the Northeast, but I want to be sure you understand exactly the dynamics of those issues. And so we'll talk about that a little bit. Before I get out of this segment, I want to talk to you about a story that we posted. And this is not like breaking news, but it's something I really wish people would go and look at. It's basically just a TPD information on some arrests that were made on December 22nd or related to a December 22nd incident. And the shocking thing here is there were six people arrested. There were various weapons confiscated, and they've got some pictures of the what was confiscated. But the six people that were arrested, they range in age from 18 to 20. I'll just read a little bit from the incident reports here. So TPD's patrol bureau received a call from a citizen and that a suspect had brandished a firearm. When officers arrived on the scene, they quickly began an investigation. Subsequently, members of TPD's violent crimes response teams and other groups immediately began searching for known groups engaged in active feuds and planning violent acts against each other. Says one of the groups, with assistance from the Joint Aviation Task Force, officers were able to locate a vehicle associated with one of the groups in the 1600 block of Baldwin Park Drive. So it says here, within hours of the initial incidents, five males were observed getting into a vehicle wearing ski masks. And so they chased these guys around town and finally caught them. But the weapons, it's unbelievable the weapons that these teenagers had access to. The driver and two additional suspects armed with an AR-15 pistol and an additional handgun fled on foot. They also, let's see, what else did they have here? Various pistols. And so, again, if you go and look at this story, this is what violent crime looks like, and this is how you stop it. But how much of this is going on in the city of Tallahassee is what is concerning. So if you get a chance, take a look at that story on Tallahassee Reports, and we'll get back. We will turn our attention to education, cell phones, and cameras. So stay tuned.
We'll be back after we flip to page two. It's the Steve Stewart Show on Real Talk 93.3. Hyper local news, fresh off the presses from Tallahassee Reports. It's the Steve Stewart Show on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Stewart Show here on Real Talk 93.3. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Getting back into things, ready for a great 2024. So we want to spend some time talking about education. As I talked about in the previous segment, we've done a number of stories on the problems facing the educational system. And again, you can always say, you can always blame it on the COVID pandemic. You can always say that, you know, we're this is just sort of the way things are moving. But you, we've talked about this. You've got to put in policies, or you got to take action that actually moves the needle. What you can't do is continue just to let things move forward by saying, well, you know, this is a national trend. And we've highlighted absenteeism, out-of-school suspensions, from data that we've, you know, from statewide data, we've been able to compare our district with other districts. And, you know, when you're above the state average in absenteeism, out-of-school suspensions, you've got a problem. And when it's a, when it's an issue that is started before COVID, then you got to start looking at what's going on here. Why can't we, you know, why can't we get a handle on this? Now, so what I want to talk about is a couple of things that I've gotten tips on. Obviously, you hear about the violence in classrooms. We reported, the only outlet to report on a second grade teacher being basically assaulted by a student to the degree that EMS had to be called and she had to be x-rayed at a hospital. I don't know why that's not receiving more publicity, but again, that gets to the whole point of transparency. And we'll talk about that more later. But, you know, we get these tips about the activity and the behavior in classrooms, the lack of respect for teachers, the use of vulgar language, not just in passing, but in addressing people. And so what do you do about it? Well, there's a couple of things. Again, with the elections coming up, what policies or what issues, what sort of campaign promises or campaign ideas could people have to address this? Well, let's look at cell phones. You know, again, I have interacted with a number of teachers that have been in the system for over 20 years. And one of the things that I had heard about was that 20 years ago, you walk through the hallway of schools and you see students talking to each other, their heads are up, teachers are making eye contact. But this a friend of mine who's been a teacher says now you go through breaks in classrooms during classes and people are, the first thing they do is they're walking through just with their head down on their phone. Now look, is that the biggest deal? No, but it does, I think it does lead to other problems in the sense that communication issues, are phones being pulled out in classrooms, even though they're, you know, supposedly can be you know, told not to bring them out. But teachers, I think, overall are frustrated with it. And so Governor DeSantis, one of the laws he signed that the legislature sent him, and it's not getting a lot of publicity, is that it provides school districts the ability to basically outlaw cell phones during class time. And so it says here, this is a New York Times article that is reporting on Orange County, which actually outlawed cell phones anywhere on campus. It says in this article, in May, Florida passed a law requiring public school districts to impose rules barring student cell phones use during class time. This fall, Orange County Public Schools, which is Orlando, went even further, barring students from using cell phones during the entire school day. And the whole issue here is getting at what happens outside the classroom. And again, the lack of communication between students. But there are other things. For example, it says here, in some schools, young people have planned and filmed assaults on fellow students and then uploaded the videos to platforms like TikTok and Instagram. Teachers and principals warned that social apps like Snapchat have also become a major distraction, prompting some pupils to keep messaging their friends during class. As a result, many individual districts, among them Orange County, South Portland, Maine, and Charlottesville City, Virginia, have banned student cell phones use throughout the day. And so the issue here is that in Orange County, you can have the phone on you, but it's got, or you can have it in your book bag, but you cannot bring it out or they will be confiscated. It says during the pandemic, Orange County educators say many students' attachment to their phones seemed to deepen. Students rarely looked up from their devices as they walked down school hallways. Some teenagers covertly filmed their classmates and spread the videos on apps like Snapchat. Quote, we saw a lot of bullying, said the principal of Timber Creek in Orlando. We had a lot of issues with students posting or trying to record things that went on during school day. Now, that in itself seems to me to be a big enough reason to ban cell phones. It says here in September, on the first day the ban took effect, Timber Creek administrators confiscated more than 100 phones from students. After that, the confiscations quickly dropped, phone-related school incidents like bullying have also decreased, administrators say. They also said students now make contact, respond when greeted. Teacher said students seem more engaged in class. Now, so these are all the positive things that they're seeing from banning cell phones in classrooms. Now, on the student side, other students are saying that school seems more prison-like. So call their parents. They have to now go to the front office. Remember that when you were in school? If you wanted to call your parents, you had to go to the front office and ask permission to use the phone. And so the issue here is they feel like, since they have this attachment to their parents, that they can't continually call their parents or text their parents. And there are some parents that say, listen, from a safety issue, I want to know that I have access to my kids. Well, the point on this, and I think this is a simple fix, they've got the camera. They're allowed to have the cell phone in their book bag. So if there's a problem, if there's a major emergency, you know, that can be dealt with. But I think the benefits that you're seeing here are much greater than the issues brought up by students or other parents. Now, down in Orange County, they're getting some feedback from parents in these surveys. They're doing that in December after the first semester. And so they'll see what the overall assessment is. And I'll be very interested in see that. But I tell you, from my perspective, this looks like something that would be well worth taking the time and trying to do here in Leon County. Now, the second issue we want to talk about is cameras in classrooms. Now, this is much more controversial. Obviously, cameras have become, you know, they've become really everywhere you go, you see a camera. There's cameras, and obviously there's cameras on cell phones. But cameras in classrooms from a discipline standpoint and being able to monitor what's going on in the classrooms is something that's starting to get some traction. But the issue revolves around discipline. If you start looking at what's going on in some of these schools, there have been articles written about how all the discipline is escalated, and they bring, again, blame COVID. However, the issue here is that we've quit enforcing rules. Tardiness, dress code, you don't address it, and then all of a sudden the kids start taking different steps. All of a sudden they're talking vulgar to teachers. I understand that the language in these schools now is ridiculous, but it probably mimics what they see on their cell phone, mimics the music they're listening to. And then all of a sudden you get to the violence, right? And so, again, I think that it would be, worthwhile looking at the benefits of cameras in classrooms given, I don't know, maybe you do it on a pilot study and see if it impacts discipline and also the academic side of this. But I will tell you, from my standpoint, looking at the elections this year, if I was a candidate for school superintendent, two things I'd be pushing for. I'd be pushing for a ban on cell phones, not only in classrooms, but off on campuses with some ability to contact your parents under emergency situations. The second thing I'd be looking at, given our increase in out-of-school suspensions, is the use of cameras in classrooms. I think I would push a pilot program here distributed across the district to see what kind of impact cameras would have in classrooms. Now, without doing these innovative things, without pushing the limits and trying to have a discussion about, listen, what are the pros and cons of a cell phone ban? What are the pros and cons of cameras in classrooms? And then going ahead and leading on those issues, I don't think we're going to move the needle where it needs to be in terms of our education system here in Leon County. And I think if you start looking at the trends that we have documented over the last few months, there needs to be some changes in policies and some rationales explained to parents and kids on why these policies are needed. And those are two that I would very much support. Ban on cell phones and a pilot study or a pilot program with cameras in classrooms. We'll finish this up when we get back. Stay tuned.
The Steve Stewart Show will be right back with Page 3 on Real Talk 93.3. Local News. It's the Steve Stewart Show on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Stewart Show here on Real Talk 93.3. We were discussing the banning of cell phones on campuses, K-12 schools, and the use of cameras in classrooms. So, you know, I think there seems to be in Florida some, obviously there are examples of banning the cell phones. The cameras in classrooms are a little different, but I will tell you the issue on my position on a pilot study is I think there is something that's not being reported on, and it's the discipline issue we're having in schools. And I think it flows from the absenteeism issue. We're not enforcing rules, okay? When you look at absenteeism, I'm not sure what the policy used to be, but it was, from what I was told, if you had three or four unexcused absences, then you did not pass, you weren't able to pass the class during that quarter. But, you know, with the COVID pandemic, and I think teachers taking advantage of giving more and more information online, there's not as much emphasis on kids being in school. And I think this has got to change. We cannot go with this trend. Okay. Now, the discipline issue is the one that concerns me because, again, we are not regulating. We are not enforcing rules, tardiness, dress code, language. Violence. What are the penalties? Are we doing anything about it if you're tardy? Or we just you know, say no problem? I mean, I think what's happening now, you could say this is generational, but there are no boundaries. And I think this is starting to impact the education system as a whole. Now you may say, Steve, you just throw your hands up. You're never going to control this. You know, look, you may be right. But if we don't try, what's going to happen is that we're going to get more reports like the TPD confiscation of those guns and the six arrests of people between the age of 18 and 20. And that's not coming from me. That's coming from Leon County Sheriff Walt McNeil's study and his understanding of the dynamic of what's going on here. And we've got to try to get a handle on this. And I don't think we have the leadership right now on the school board or in the superintendent's office to make these changes. First of all, you're not even recognizing a problem. When you don't issue a press release about a second grade teacher being assaulted with the EMS having to take her to the hospital, you're hiding stuff. Clearly hiding stuff. And so there needs to be some strong policy changes in our school system if we want to try to move the needle and to try to buck the trends that are continuing. Orange County has done this with banning cell phones. I think it's something we should do here. I think we also need to look at a pilot program for cameras in classrooms. I've talked about that. Now, what's coming up in January? Look, you know, we like to obviously cover local government meetings here, and January is going to be a slow month. The city of Tallahassee won't meet till January 17th. They're going to have their annual retreat where they talk about the great things they've done and what they want to do. This will be a little bit more contentious because of the split on the city commission. So we'll get a little bit more insight here on some of the issues. We'll see if there's any back and forth. One of the things that, you know, I've noticed, and I think it's a strategy. I don't know if it's going to change, but you know, Commissioner Jack Porter and Commissioner Matt Lowe are very aggressive in what their beliefs are in trying to make points at these city commission meetings. They use the city commission meetings and the time that is allocated for citizens to speak up to make their political points. I think the approach that the majority has taken up to this point is to ignore them. Now, if you saw Mayor Daley at the last couple of meetings, he's been trying to reel in citizens' comments. Didn't go over well. I think that what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to fight back. I was told one time when I ran, one of the number of times I ran for office, that voters like people that fight back. But what you've got to do is you got to fight back intelligently. You got to fight back with the facts. And if you don't do that, if you just sit there and take a beating, you know, it can escalate into an issue that has a impact in elections. Now, I understand that part of this is, if you look at the social media platforms of these progressives, not a lot of people following them. So why give them information, or why do you give them ammunition? Well, the problem is they're going to use these things when elections come up. They're going to have money because we've already saw how these groups from outside of the city of Tallahassee will pump in money to these progressive causes. So this will be something to watch at the annual retreat to see what the dynamic is, if there's going to be a change. But that would be a time to start making some strategic decisions on where you're going to attack and fight back on some of these issues, because you've got more time. Now, in terms of the county, they will get back into the swing of things on January 22nd. They'll have a workshop, and then the 23rd, they'll have their regular meeting. As I mentioned earlier, Blueprint will not have their first meeting until February. And so that will address, again, the agenda is not out on that, but affordable housing will be an issue there. And then the school board will meet next week. They'll have their agenda workshop January 8th. And also on the 9th is when they'll have their full meeting. I've looked at the agenda. We'll spend some more time looking at it. It's not real detailed. It's the first one of the year. But again, I do think, given the way the school year ended, with concerns being raised about absenteeism and also these out-of-school suspensions, I think there's going to be some movements to continue to talk about these issues. But the one thing that, and we're, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to cover this, but the one thing that really concerns me about the school board is transparency. And that really does fall on local media, and that does fall on Taos Reports and our show here. And we're going to try to make sure that, you know, we've got some grassroots information that will give you the status of what's going on. And when I say grassroots information, you know, look, you can go to the Florida Department of Education. You can look at all these numbers, you know, that are delayed a year. You can look at graduation rates, test scores, which are all aggregated together from all the different schools. But are you really getting near real-time information on what is going on in the schools? You know, I'd like to, because like we're doing with the incident reports with the Tallahassee Police Department, on Thursday, we're going to be able to report to you the number of crime incidents, violent crime property incidents in 2023, and how they compared to 2022. We're not going to have to wait till May or further, or maybe over the summer, to get the FDLE reports. We're going to get information right on the ground of what's going on. And so the idea would be, can we get that type of information on the school system? You know, can we find out on a monthly basis, you know, what's going on with the absenteeism, out of school suspensions? We're going to be looking for that information, and what specific schools are having the most problems. This stuff it's very difficult. It's not difficult. It's time consuming to get this type of information, but that's where you learn the most about what's going on. And I think one of the things that if you're a decision maker that doesn't want to push the envelope, you just want to hide this stuff, then you can aggregate all this data together and release it. And it doesn't really mean anything. And so that's something that I think we really need to start looking at with our schools. Are there schools that are having more problems with out-of-school suspensions, absenteeism, discipline problems? And let's hold them accountable. I mean, again, if you go back and look at this second grade teacher, that was Kate Sullivan Elementary School. Okay, you will not hear that anywhere else. And the issue is, what happened there? And if they're not reporting this, are there other assaults that have taken place that they're not reporting? Because this didn't reach a level to where the school board said, you know, we've got to let parents know about this. We've got to let the community know this is an issue, and we're trying to address it. Not one word. That, I tell you, that is going to be a campaign issue. The transparency of what's going on in these schools, they try to hide everything. We saw it with the problems that we had with these athletic coaches over the last 6 months to a year. They won't do anything until it gets so bad that they have to respond because the media has discovered it. And I think that is not a good approach to getting on the front end of anything. So if they're doing this with the out of school suspensions and the absenteeism, just ignoring it, are you really comfortable with what's going on in the classrooms if you're a parent? I mean, that is got to be a concern. All right, on that note, so when we get back, we're going to look at elections. This is where you make a difference. You can evaluate the different policies, and something we haven't talked about is there's a major entrant into the superintendent of schools race. We'll talk about who that is, and then we're going to talk about the dynamics and why how it could have a major impact on the outcome. So stay tuned.
We'll be right back with more Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3. From the pages of Tallahassee Reports to your radio waves, it's the Steve Stewart Show on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Stewart Show here on Real Talk 93.3. Appreciate you tuning in today. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Wanted to get right back into it on January 2nd here to get you back into the mood of getting all this local information. So, look, I want to, in this segment, I want to highlight four races that I think right now look to be the most important and will have, I think, the most impact on local government. If you look at the two city races, we've talked about these. This is incumbent Curtis Richardson being challenged by Dorothy Inman Johnson and a gentleman named Bernard Stevens. Now, that is obviously Dorothy Inman Johnson has sort of laid down what she believes, and she said she would be the third vote to fire Reese Goad, which means she's sort of throwing her lot in with the progressive movement. The other race there is the progressive on the city commission, Jack Porter, who's being challenged by Rudy Ferguson and a couple other gentlemen. So, again, that race will determine, those two races will determine the power struggle of the majority on the city commission. So those will be very important, and we're going to focus on those. Another race is District 4. Brian Welch running is the incumbent, and he has drawn an opponent named Isaac Monteo, who's been able to raise $30,000. And so I think this is going to be a race to watch because Commissioner Welch was he was the one that beat longtime incumbent Brian Welch. Brian DeLoge. And so he was sort of an unknown. No, he was unknown. And then he came up and beat Brian DeLoge because of, I think, some of the things that happened with DeLoge, and also he'd been in office for a long time. So now Brian Welch is going to have the strength of the incumbency, but not a lot of history or not a lot of name ID. And so usually people that win like that, to defeat incumbents, will get challengers right after that, and they have to sort of consolidate their support. And so this is going to be an interesting race to watch and see, watch the donations and see what issues come up here to try to separate those two. So those are three races. The fourth race is going to be the race for superintendent. Rocky Hanna got in a while back, but over the holidays, the principal at Childs High School, Joe Burgess, filed to run for office. And you might say, Steve, this is just another Democrat on Democrat battle. Not a lot to see here. Well, I disagree, and let me tell you why. So Rocky Hanna, who had previously run as independent, now has chosen to run as a Democrat. Unlike the other races I mentioned, this is a partisan race. So there will be primaries for Democrats and Republicans. So Superintendent Hanna has signed up to run as a Democrat. The principal, Childs Burgess, has signed up to run as an independent, which means that there'll be no primary, so he will be on the ballot in November. And an added electoral factor here is that Mr. Burgess is African-American, which is a big, most African-Americans are Democrats. So in the general election, if Rocky Hanna was to win the Democratic nomination, you would have Rocky Hanna is a Democrat running against Joe Burgess as an independent, and then you could have a Republican running. And if you had a Republican running, it would only take 33% plus one to win the election. Now, Rocky Hanna previously took advantage of this approach and ran as an independent. Remember, and Jackie Pons was running as a Democrat. And in the very beginning, this was 2016, a lot of Republicans, there was no Republican candidate or not a exciting Republican candidate. So there was a lot of Republicans that voted for Rocky Hanna. Well, again, when you're in office, what happens is you tend to make friends and you make enemies and your positions become more known. Now, all of a sudden, Rocky Hanna has moved from being independent to the Democratic Party. So his Republican support, which really got him elected, is probably not going to go his way now. And if a Republican candidate gets in, which I can almost guarantee someone will, in the general, you're going to have a Republican, you're going to have Joe Burgess as an African-American independent principal, and then you would have Superintendent Hanna. I think this is going to be a very interesting race. I think that it hopefully will generate some policy prescriptions for the problems that we've had, and that's what people will vote on. But before we get to November, what's going to be interesting is to see if someone gets in to the Democratic primary to challenge Rocky Hanna. And so this is a much different path than Superintendent Hanna used in his previous elections. And that's why I think this is an important race for two things. First of all, I think our education system is in need of some real help, and there's some policies that could be implemented if the right person gets elected that I think everybody would really agree with. I mean, we have spent so much more time on gender identity than we've spent on the impact of cell phones and the discipline problem, and now it shows. We're ahead of the state. We're above the state average in both of those categories. And so I think, you know, somebody's going to be held accountable, and so we'll see what happens on that. But I think this will be a riveting race, especially if a Republican gets in November. But again, even more riveting for me is to see if Rocky Hanna is going to be challenged in the Democratic primary. Now, the thing is here, who would do that? Would some school board members do it? Look, they're all, except for Lori Cox, who is a registered Republican, I believe the other four are registered Democrats. So they could easily, if they wanted to run, could get into the primary and say, listen, these are the issues that are important to me, and this is why I'm different than Superintendent Hanna. Now, would they do that? Who knows? There has not been any indication that anybody really wants to. However, from an outsider standpoint, it seems like that, you know, Pam Hightower ran as a Democrat in the primary last time and ended up losing, but did get a lot of votes. So she's got some name ID. People have voted for her. And she comes from the Leon school system, the education system. I believe she was a teacher. I'm not sure if she was a principal, but that's someone to keep an eye on. And also, don't forget Jackie Pons. Now, Jackie Pons is now the principal of a school over in Jefferson County that was just made news from going from a C to a B. You know, can you imagine if Jackie Pons ran as a Democrat against Rocky Hanna in the primary? And then you also had Pam Hightower. I think that there is a lot of fireworks are getting put or loaded up and not yet lit, but that race, I think, is the one that can provide a lot of interesting candidate choices, but it comes in an area where we really need some more leadership, given the reports that we've seen over the last couple of years about the school system. And listen, school systems all over the country are having problems. That's an opportunity. When you see a problem, you also should see an opportunity. And right here, we see a lot of opportunities to change things. The question is, will we get a leader that has the courage to say, look, we need to ban cell phones. We need to possibly look at cameras in classrooms and make the make the rational argument on why we need to go down that road. My point is, this superintendent race, with the possibility of having three or four candidates, we may get a discussion on those type of issues. So, look, that's down the road, but not far away, and we'll keep an eye on that. Thanks for tuning in today. That's all the time we have, but I will be back on Thursday. Have a great afternoon.